Hello, and welcome to The Forecast, Seattle's weekly women's sports show here on KVRU 105.7 FM. I'm here today with Odessa Jenkins. Odessa is the founder and CEO of the Women's National Football Conference. Odessa, thank you so much for being here.
What's up, Maggie? Thanks for having me.
All right, Odessa, or OJ, as your friends call you, I'm gonna be your friend here today.
It's a friendly call.
I love it. I have been writing about women and sports and culture and just how deeply women athletes are underestimated for many, many years now. And one of the things I find have always found so interesting is this idea that there are certain sports that women just don't play. Right? That women just weren't cut out for. So we're not going to do that. Can you start just by telling me a little bit about your background with tackle football?
Yeah. I loved tackle football since the time I could probably walk, since my parents started letting me go outside alone. The first thing we started doing as kids, when we were out there was playing blacktop football. I'm from LA, so we were outside kids, weather was nice.
And I
fell in love with the sport, mainly because of kind of what you described, which is odd these days, is, it was the sport that always made a spot for me. Yeah. Everyone was needed. You needed 11 players. You know, when the boys were out playing 5v5, they could actually sit me down and make an excuse for why I couldn't come in the game. But in football, they needed a running back, and somebody was small and fast and nimble. And I just fit right into that. Yeah. And so of all the things, tackle football, I fell in love with it because of family, because of the culture of it all, but mostly because it was a place where I belonged. So that was my initial introduction to the sport, just playing, doing what my brothers and cousins did, because that's who I hung out with. I went on and played Division I basketball up at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, when I was told that girls don't play tackle football in high school and college. And that's when things kind of stuttered for me, and mm-hmm. went and got a college degree. And as soon as I left college and moved to Texas, I started looking for women's tackle football again. And that's kind of what led to where I am today.
That's amazing. So when you looked for women's tackle football after college, so had you ever played tackle football in an organized way, or was it just that neighborhood game that you were in love with?
It was a neighborhood game. And then a guy at my university, funny enough, a football player, had started like some little 7-on-7 rec girls football thing that we did on the weekends, and I played in that, and that was my first time ever playing against other girls or women, and I thought this was cool, but women don't play 11-on-11 in organized football. So when I got to Texas, and I figured it's Texas, yeah. So I don't know if y'all know anything about Texas, but they we got a couple things, oil and football.
There we go.
And barbecue and heat and football and heat and football. So I got here and I thought, you know what? If women are going to play football anywhere on the planet, it might be here. So I looked it up, and sure enough, there was this massive history of women playing 11-on-11 organized and in some ways unorganized football. I mean, a history that went back to the 1800s.
Yeah, but it's incredible, right? I think that's one of the things that I always love learning about when it comes to women in sports is if you think women don't do it, like you just have to look and you find out that they really have always been doing it, right? We see that with tackle football. We see that with baseball. We see that with all of these sports that really have this like male narrative around them. So what was it like just discovering that, first of all, that history, of course, but also a league where you could play this game that you'd been, you know, loving and wanting to play for so long?
I felt completely robbed, to be honest with you. Like, I think there was a feeling of I could have been doing this all along. I let someone else chart my path. I was a pretty high level athlete. And I always felt that the best fit for myself as an athlete was as a running back. And I was a point guard in basketball, and I loved playing defense and all those things, but I was just a football player out there. And that narrative never made sense to anyone, because most people had never seen women play football, including me.
Yeah.
And so that was the first feeling. The first feeling was, man, I feel robbed. The next feeling was, I'm never going to be robbed again. Like, I'm going to go and play football, and football will be a part of my life forever. And so I was excited and nervous about the opportunity to go through this thing that I'd loved my whole life. And thank God I was still in my 20s and, you know,
still athletic. Good enough
to ball a little bit. I didn't suck. That would have been terrible to like find it and suck.
Yeah. I didn't have not have the joints for it anymore. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, you were clearly an athlete. I mean, it's no joke to be a D1 basketball player in college. You answered this a little bit, but, you know, would you have preferred to have been there playing football? And what was kind of the switch to basketball like for you?
Yeah, I would have absolutely preferred to be playing football, whatever that would have meant. I think in right around seventh grade, I started thinking, okay, boys are getting bigger. Obviously, I don't see any girls playing in high school, but that never meant anything to me. I never was the kind of person that needed to see something in order for me to think that it was possible. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, well, there's no girls playing. I'll be the first girl. I'll go play running back in the football season. Then I'll play basketball during the basketball season. And it started to be reinforced to me really quickly by my teammates, as well as by my coaches, that they would go on and I wouldn't. It was like, okay, so what's next for you, O? Mm-hmm. Like, same thing that's next for you. I'm going to spring ball. And it's like, no, that's not what's next for you. That's what's next for the boys. So the transition was really, really hard and stark and painful. But, you know, you go do what you think you have to do to get where you want to. I was also a kid trying to get my family out of Watts. So I needed an education and I needed all those other things. So while football was something I loved, it wasn't the outcome that I was seeking at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Then playing in Texas, what was the kind of setup of that league? Like you mentioned organized and disorganized. What was that like for you? I assume you were also, you know, working full time and things like that. So what was your life like, you know, juggling all of that?
Man, it was the wild, wild west. It's so funny you asked that because we talk about it now. Like I was, most of my coaching staff here in Dallas are former women's tackle football players, but they're OGs. And we talk about the life that these women get to live now.
Yeah.
And we're nowhere close to where we need to be in terms of resources and professionalism, but we are planets away from what it was like when we played. I mean, like, we would go out there, we all had on different uniforms. Some of us were in cleats, some of us weren't. Some of us were in football stuff, some of us weren't. We were playing on holy grass fields. Sometimes we didn't have lights, and so, you know, the car lights would light up the field, everybody pull up their cars. And then it was just normal. It was like, okay, that's just what you do if you want to play football. And then when the season started, it was like sometimes the team would show up, sometimes they wouldn't. Like you'd have a forfeit, and that was normal. It was just, these were the normal things. It was normal to give, you know, your team $3,000 at the beginning of the season to try and come up with $3,000-$4,000 to afford it as fees or dues. Like that was a normal thing. It was normal for nobody to help you. There were no sponsorships. There were no donations. There was none of that. And it was also very normal for only you guys to know that you were the one playing. So there wasn't any streaming or TV or anything like that. You were always telling people, oh, I play football. What does that look like? Oh, I play football. What does that look like? So like that was the reality. But I can't say it was all bad because it also meant so much to us as athletes to be able to do what we love. So while it was a ratchet in so many ways, it was also beautiful because it built the baseline that we stand on right now.
Yeah. I mean, it takes such commitment to make something like that work, right? Especially with, you know, other adults who have all these other things going on in their lives, you know, but to truly love a sport that much to like bring people together with very little resources, very little investment, right? Did you feel like you'd kind of like found your people too when you got into this league?
Absolutely. I think I always knew that athletes were my people. I just got along better with people who live life with a win and a loss column, but learn how to love in the middle. Mm. So I just always got along well with those kind of people. And then when I found football people, particularly football women, it was like, yeah, this is where I was supposed to be all the time. I was supposed to be here with a bunch of pioneers, people who loved physical contact, but also loved the idea of strategizing for how not to make it happen. And frankly, people who would sacrifice more than people thought was reasonable to do what they love. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I was always able to align with too. So absolutely found people, but I found my best friend, my wife, my business partner. So yes. More literally, I literally found my
people. Yes, that's amazing. All right. So tell me about the idea for the WNFC. When did that kind of take root for you to build something that was, you know, a little more serious, a little more organized, you know, with a little more resources?
Yeah, it came when it was always in my head. I think after my first season, we were a really good football team here. It was called the Dallas Diamonds, and they were really good, and they had great athletes. They had this woman named Jessica Springer. She's like 5'10", ran a 4.89 40, could bench press like 300 pounds. I mean, she was a pure athlete, and she would mow you, literally flatten people and run you over. And so there were athletes like that that I played with, and I'm just like, these are amazing athletes, and the product is pretty good. Like, why isn't there some sort of strategic business around it? Because I was, at the time, I was also growing startups and learning how to scale technology companies. So I was like in that mode.
Oh, wow.
So right away after season one, I'm like, yeah, this can't be it, right? Like, I'm not paying anybody else. So if this is what it takes to play, we got to figure something. At least I have to personally go find some sponsors or something, because that's not happening for me. So I think the more and more women that started to discover it, the more pressure I personally felt to not have the standard be amateurism.
Yeah.
And the turning point was really Team USA 2017. At that point, I've achieved all that you could achieve as a football player at any level, really. A gold medal with the national team, national championships. At this time, I'm owning a team. My team that I owned won the Natty. I'm a head coach. I'm a head coach of the national champion. Like, check, check, check. I got voted the top running back in the world by IFAF. Like, all those things were happening. And then the NFL called and was looking for women who knew how to coach, really. And they were opening the Bill Walsh diversity internship up to women for the first time in the history of sport. And I was lucky enough to be one of the women who was called. And when I got to NFL training camp, that was the turning point. It was like, okay, I knew there was a gap.
So to speak, yeah.
A little bit of a gap. 100 billion versus zero. Like, I knew, but it's one thing to read on paper mm-hmm. about affluence, and it is another thing to experience it.
Yeah.
It's like we as normal Americans know that there is somebody that is about to become a trillionaire in our world, right? And you can know that. I can listen to that. I can, you know, listen to Crunchbase tell me that Elon Musk is about to be a trillionaire.
Yeah.
But as I sit in my house, I don't really understand what it's like to sit in a house that is 30,000 square feet with six pools and have six butlers and maids. And I don't know that.
Yeah.
But that's what it was like walking in an NFL training camp. It was like, they got butlers? Did somebody just open the door for me? Like, what the? You know what I mean? Like, does everybody have on new cleats? Like, what is is going on? And like, I got a whole swag package and I'm making more than I ever made as an athlete. And I'm like, what is going on? So I could not do my job. I could not stay focused on being a coach.
Yeah.
Because I was so envious, really. And that was a turning point. My guy, Devontae Freeman, shout out to him, signed the biggest contract in the history of the NFL that year as a running back at my position group.
Yep.
And I just said, I'd be damned. I'd be damned if I'm going to go another decade and not try to alleviate this feeling of feeling undervalued, being the best at what I do in the world. And so that was the turning point. Came back, finished out some work that I was doing in a tech firm. And 2 years later, the WNFC was born. But that was why. I had my teammates at home and I couldn't stop thinking about them. Couldn't stop thinking about them at work. While I was all fly dripped out in my stuff as an intern, eating 4-course meals. Like I could not stop thinking about my teammates.
I bet. I mean, I think that's something that we've talked about before on this show, is that idea that, you know, there's so much forward progress when it comes to women's sports and women athletes, right? There's so much, you know, oh, the women are finally getting attention. People finally watch WNBA games. Oh, they're finally going to make $1 million, whatever. It's like, we're celebrating these things as though they're equality when they're like 1% of what we give men to do the same thing, right? If that. And then football is like an entirely different universe, like you're saying, you know? So many people just do not associate tackle football with women. Over the years, I've spoken with some of the women who are doing flag football, and I know the NFL has really kind of decided that that's where they want to push when they talk about women playing football. What's your thought on that in terms of just like, does that make sense, and what's the gender equity story there?
Yeah, so. No, it doesn't make sense. Yes, it is good. And I think the idea of a giant corporation like the NFL and a giant association figuring out how it wants to diversify itself slowly is not abnormal at all. Like, if you step back from it and think about it that way, like, it's not abnormal at all. And it's very, very good for us that girls and women are playing flag football. It's been one of the accelerants, frankly, of our sport. More and more girls, every time you put a football in the hand of a girl or a woman, you create a tackle football player. So that's good for me. It's all the NFL wants to put $32 million into making sure that more footballs go in the hands of girls and women. It's good. And frankly, every time a woman wins, like, it's just another notch in the belt of us getting to equality, or us getting to equity, us getting to inclusion. So I'm a girl's girl. So if there's a flag player tomorrow that's going to make $90 billion, I hope she doesn't have to earn it. I hope they just give it to her, because it's about damn time that you seed some of the greatness that's coming for women, and then you don't have to do it and then get paid 100 years later. Mm-hmm. So that's how I feel about that. I do think that as a person who understands the value of women in football, and frankly, just the value of playing football and the product itself, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that it's absolutely ridiculous to think that the narrative of women and girls in playing football stops with playing flag. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I don't know another word for it. Yeah. Because I think that if that is the narrative, then you just told yourself that you got into the brain of women, and that brain is very limited. You got into the capabilities of women and girls, and those capabilities are limited. And I think the story really is that access is limited, right? Access. Yeah. You can't, if you're a 12-year-old girl, you can't go play tackle football on the girls' tackle football team.
Right.
I think it's as simple as that. I think it's an access issue, not a want to. I also am, I'm a marketer, so I understand you got to ease the world into it.
Yes.
You know, some things you got to ease the world into. And strong women is one of those things.
That is true. There is a long history of that. This is I think one of the biggest issues is, yeah, people are simply uncomfortable with the idea of strong women, of women being super physical and aggressive and all of that.
The greatest revolution in sports is happening. And that revolution is that women are strong because they like being strong. Women are physical because they like being physical. Women are aggressive because they like being aggressive, not because of men. Ooh, and I know that's hard for some people to hear.
I love it. I love it. So talk to me about the WNFC today. I think this is the seventh season that's going to start. Tell me what's the landscape currently and what have you grown?
Explosive. It's the WNFC's on fire right now. Like the landscape is really, we frankly have not hit the tip of, we're at the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more, but where we are right now is there are 900 plus women that have thrown their hat in the ring, that have gone to a tryout, a combine, that have decided that they and have been chosen and selected to be good enough to play tackle football at the highest level for a woman on the planet. The best players in the world are here. 90% of the U.S. national tackle team plays in the WNFC. We have more Division I athletes playing in the WNFC this season than ever in the history of the sport. We have more multi-sport athletes than ever in the history of the WNFC playing in the sport. We have more eyeballs. We engaged 100 million people last year through social and digitally. We just added a new franchise in Northern California in the Golden State Storms. We got 16 teams. We have, every single game being streamed live globally. We have linear. We're going to be on ESPN2 again with our championship game. We have more teams playing in larger stadiums than ever before in the history of the sport. We have more athletes that have gotten individual sponsorships. It's a record sponsorship year for the individual athletes as well as for the league. So all of those things are very, very small in number, but giant in value. Mm-hmm. I expect that this is going to be also a record year in attendance and viewership. So that's where we are. That's where the WNFC is. So when you look at it from that lens, it's like, yeah, more girls and women than ever in the history of the world are playing football. And the WNFC is the premier place to do it.
It's amazing. And then what are your goals? Like, I know that NFL experience, you know, put some lofty ideas, probably some things that you're envious of, you probably want to bring to these women. What do you hope this league turns into in the next several years?
Very simply, the mission is not change, accelerate financial equity for women through the power of football and get women paid to play. Mm-hmm. That, if there were nothing else, that's it. Obviously, as a CEO, from a business perspective, strategically, I need, you know, 16 to 20 great local businesses that make up this league. We need 16 to 20 amazing investors that are in for the long haul to wait as the pipeline gets developed and build local businesses and come together as an association and build out a stable revenue and build out great community organizations. We're going to look like a league that is all about the community and all about the player. So I don't think we're going to be like anything that currently exists, except for in ways of traditional business. Sponsorships, media rights, IP, events, apparel, all of those things you'll see scale over the next several years. But I think what will be different is because of that, the change that I think I just talked to you about. This league is about strong women. It can't act like it's anything else. We can but this league is about strong women. That is our product. That's what we are selling. And that's what everybody's falling in love with. So that's what you'll see over the next 5 to 6 years, us promoting that, us not running away from that, us being excited about that, and us building a core business and a business strategy around how to ensure that we're continuing to drive revenue and commerce around it.
Amazing. So we're based here in Seattle. The Seattle Majestics have been...
Shout out to the Majestics! Let's go!
Yes, the Majestics have been here really for a long time. Like, they've got a huge history and are now part of the WNFC. What should potential fans here in Seattle know about getting out to a game? What can they expect to see?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is that you got one of the best players on the planet playing for the Seattle Majestics and Adriana Gutierrez. So if you love watching great athletes play anything, then that's one reason to get your butt in the seat to go watch the Seattle Majestics. Step one, I think what they can expect is a great time, like community. It very much is a family atmosphere. I think now, and I hope we never lose this, but one of the coolest things about going to a WNFC event is that you feel like you just walked into like your auntie and your cousin's house. It's like, yo, hey, everybody loves being there. Everyone's excited about you coming because every fan that steps into the gates these days represent the growth of the business and the growth of the platform. So it's a really cool time. I hope we never lose it. I hope we get our Savannah Bananas on and we always keep that vibe, right? But that's one of the coolest things. If you are under the sound of my voice and you're in Seattle and you're looking for a place to go where you can be yourself, where you can be authentic, where your family can be safe, where you can have a good time and you can be entertained, go to a Seattle Majestics game.
Amazing. I want to ask, what is the craziest thing anyone has ever said to you when you tell them you're a women's football player or you started a women's football league?
What is the craziest advice or the craziest thing anyone's ever said to me?
The craziest thing anyone's ever said to you.
I still think the craziest thing people said to me is, are they in lingerie? Do you think about putting them in different uniforms? That to me is the craziest thing, that someone thinks that because that kind of entertainment may have been popular in the past, that it will be a sustainable way for serious professional athletes to make a living wage for decades to come. I just think, to me, and again, I'm a girl's girl. Shout out to the girls that's out there getting it done in the lingerie. Like, do your thing, sis. Like, I'm about that action. You will never hear me demean another woman. But it's just not my product. And so to ask, it's a different product. So to ask, it's like if you were sitting here talking to the commissioner of the NBA or the WNBA, like, this is why it's so crazy to me, because it'd be like, it's not like asking Kathy in the WNBA to lower the rim. Like, that's, you know, you always hear those things. Hey, you guys think you should be dunking more? I would be fine if somebody was like, hey, you guys should maybe get a much smaller bar or shorten the field or whatever. I don't get that. I get, you know, put them in bras.
Yeah.
Like, which is wild, because can you imagine? It's like, hey, you guys want to scale the NWL? You want to go even faster? It's just wild. So to me, that's wild.
Yeah. Well, and I think it speaks to what you're talking about with, you know, really doubling down on the idea that what you're selling is not, you know, women doing something for some kind of other entertainment, right? It's like, no, these are athletes who are strong, who are playing a sport that maybe you've not seen women play, but they play and they play well. That's like,
and I think the idea that strong means ugly
is
changing too, right? Like, this idea that strong can be like, we can care about all the things, beauty, we can care about femininity, we can care about masculinity, we can care about hard and soft, but it's all strong, right? And I think that's the thing that is so uncomfortable, because we're all breaking out of our traditional sense of what that looks like. Nobody ever has to tack anything else on the strong men, but it's like strong women gets a whole different like vibe and we gonna embrace that vibe.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what are you most excited about just this season for the WNFC, just in terms of, you know, anything new or growth that's happening? What are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, it's awareness. I think, you know, the way we grew this business originally was to get out to the people digitally, social media, that kind of stuff. And we're completely seeing that start to take off. So I think awareness is the thing I'm most excited about, because I think when people discover it, then they know all the other stuff that we're doing. Like, we have a awesome creator relationship that we just created with Carmen Elena and our chief turnip officer. So things like we're doing things like that with really big creators. We're back at the Dallas Cowboys headquarters for our championship weekend. So having that kind of thing is really, really awesome. The ability now, our games being on Victory Plus, we're now with the NWSL and, you know, volleyball, and just more spaces for women in sports is really, really awesome. I think the idea that this is going to probably be the most competitive women's tackle football season in the history of women's tackle football, with the best players to play the sport to date, is something that I'm really, really excited about. And the last part is just business stuff, is we're going to go raise a Series A and raise some capital around women's football. And that'll be a historic moment. Our seed round was historic, and our Series A is going to be historic. And I'm going to bring more entertainers and business people and investors and big timers into the sport of women's tackle football in 2026. And that's what I'm excited about.
A little bit on that financial side that you just mentioned, it's clear you have a vision of how to grow things. Maggie and I talk a lot about that. It's not building resources, is like, this is a great opportunity for a business person, because there's the ceiling is, you know, huge. What would your take be as someone trying to grow something, and you're actively pitching to people? What's your kind of pitch to them? It's, you know, how are you having those conversations? Cause I feel like it's, as an investor, like there's money to be made here.
Yeah. This is kind of a no-brainer investment if you are looking at it in terms of sports and entertainment right now. We have all of the things that matter. We have scale, the ability to scale, which is a big thing. We have purpose, because everybody wants to know, what am I doing this for? What is the end goal? The end goal is that you absolutely get to change one of the biggest markets on the planet. It's the last frontier in professional sports. So you get to put your name on the idea that you were the reason you're going to be on the cap table that changed professional sports forever. And so that, I think that is a big deal. I think the other deal is availability to the market. The idea that hundreds and millions of girls are playing tackle and flag football, and that it is globalized now, becomes a whole nother opportunity for investors. The other thing is we're a very clean business, right? It's early. We don't have our cap table's extremely clean. And I think most 7-year businesses that are scaling and growing at 3x like we are, it's a little muddy, right? They're either over leveraged in borrowing. They're over leveraged in terms of investment. We're not over leveraged at all. We're a clean, profitable, under leveraged business. So when somebody comes and puts dollars into us, they're putting into in a way that there's just nothing but upside. I think the 8x and 9x return that you're seeing in volleyball and baseball and basketball, you're absolutely going to see here. I think the other thing about this business is, on the traditional sports investment side, we're unique in that you can come in both ways. So there's team investment and there's also league investment. So we're structured for both, which a lot of leagues are closed to only team investors. And so I think that's a massive attraction for us as well. I think the other thing that I would say to an investor is simply this: 900 women every year for probably 50 years have found this sport and played it in an organized manner. For 7 years, most of those women are athletes who could contend in other professional sports. And that is with what we've currently done. Imagine putting true resource to that strategy, what things will look like in 36 months, let alone 10 years. And so clean business, clean talent, great product, great upside. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's awesome. I preach to the choir. We're always upset about this idea because we think there's money to be made, right? Like, and there's a huge market share that the NFL sort of feasts on its own. And, you know, you having part of that or growing that, I think is really exciting. I think the other thing you mentioned before Maggie jumped on was you're taking some women to Adidas. Can you just tell us what's so exciting about this opportunity as you're growing this? You're making connections. Like, this is really impactful, not just for you and the league, but I think also for these athletes get to have a unique experience on the business side.
You know, that is the coolest thing about the WNFC for me. Mm-hmm. I know it's my job to talk about the business stuff a lot and investors and make this attractive to people who never thought that they'd be attracted to women playing football. But the thing that keeps me up, I'm tired as hell right now. And the reason that I'm so on fire is because the experience every day of the women who play professional tackle football is improving daily. And this idea that we're going to take this group of women who work full-time jobs, who see brands like Adidas promote Patrick Mahomes and have seen, you know, professional NFL players and Division I football players land on brands like Adidas and Nike and Under Armour and be treated like kings on campus. That this is the first time in the history of professional and organized women's tackle football that this has been afforded to them. And they're not being invited by anybody. The head of Adidas Football US said, come see me. And that is like, I'm so excited for them and they're so excited, but they deserve so much more. It is just the tip of the iceberg, as I said, but that is the thing that makes me most proud. It makes me most proud that there are athletes in the WNFC now that rely on their sponsors. There are athletes in the WNFC that when they go play their biggest game in the world, the whole world gets to see it. And I can tell you just 5 years ago, that wasn't real.
I'm also like a little mad that I didn't grow up in the same area as you, because at my high school, we had a couple women on my team. We could have used a running back, you know? I mean, our running back was really good, but like we needed it more. You always need more running backs.
Yes, you can.
But I think one thing I learned from that experience, like I grew up playing baseball with Diane, and then she played football and she wrestled. She was the homecoming queen. Like she was strong. She was tiny. Like there was all these things. But I think one of the things that I often reference or I took away was her athletic ability could go across almost any sport. Like she was one of the most athletic people I've ever been around, with a work ethic that was like untouched by anybody else. And I think about women in the Seattle area who have found, let's say, Aussie rules football. You know, I know some who've played that, or rugby. Like those are kind of acceptable spaces. And they are often multi-sport athletes. They played soccer, they played softball, they did all these things. What would your call be to some of those athletes who are looking for ways to be physical, to like embrace their strength? You know, what would your like pitch to them in the Seattle area be?
Challenge them, because this is like these kind of women. I challenge them. This is not a call to action. I'm not begging them. I'm challenging them. If you are a woman and you play any contact sport or have ever wanted to play a contact sport, and you believe that you can do anything that is available to you, I would like to see you go out and give it a shot and show up for National Tryout Day for the Seattle Majestics. This is a challenge to every athlete in Seattle and beyond, because the most challenging thing, like, I don't want to make it seem like this is easy to do. Like, you won't get me on the radio talking about, hey, everybody go do it, because people gonna show up and get their earrings knocked out. This is for a small percentage of women who live and breathe contact and challenging things and want to do hard stuff and believe that on the other end of hard stuff is a better person. If that is you, if you are that kind of person, or if you've always wanted to do something and want to unlock that in yourself, this is for you.
Thank you so much, OJ, Odessa Jenkins, the founder and CEO of the Women's National Football Conference, for joining us here on The Forecast, Seattle's weekly women's sports show. Our show airs on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. and Wednesday at 9 a.m. on KVRU, or you can find us on your podcast feeds. I'm Maggie Mertens, your host. We're produced by Jeff Scott Shaw. Thanks to Crystal Fincher, Shannon Chang, and the rest of the staff at KVRU for broadcasting our show. We want to continue to hear from you as we get The Forecast going. Reach out with story ideas, comments, questions, your own hot takes. You can reach us at theforecast@kvru.org or on Instagram at Seattle Women's Sports. For more information on how to support KVRU, head over to kvru.org. We will be back next week with more women's sports.